Good afternoon. Senate Judiciary Committee meeting is called to order. Today is Wednesday, September 8th. The time is 1:33. We're meeting in State Capitol Room number 205, and senators in attendance are Senator Hughes, Senator Myers, Senator Keel, and myself as chair, Senator Holland. Senator Schauer will not be able to attend today. I thank Representative Kaufman for showing up today. Thanks for joining in. We do have a quorum present to conduct business. Thank you to Nancy, our recording secretary, and Nate, our moderator for the day. As a reminder, please silence your cell phones. All right, SJR 301. I will now bring SJR Senate Joint Resolution 301, a proposed constitutional amendment to the appropriation limit sponsored by Senator Myers, back before the committee. This is the second hearing of SJR 301. And I will welcome Senator Reinbold to the committee. Thank you for joining us today. I will now open public testimony for Senate Joint Resolution 301. So public testimony is open. I see Quinn Townsend. Quinn Townsend, can you hear me? I heard something. All right, Quinn Townsend, please state your name for the record and begin your public testimony.
Thank you, Chair Holland and members of the Judiciary Committee. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. I am Quinn Townsend, testifying on behalf of Alaska Policy Forum. Alaska has had a history of high spending during times of economic growth that has led to fiscal problems today. One mechanism to rein in that tendency to increase spending when times are good is through an appropriation limit or spending cap. Implementing an effective spending cap will help stabilize future state budgets and encourage private sector growth in Alaska. Economic literature shows that a spending cap is beneficial in curbing the growth of state spending as long as it is structured correctly. There are four main aspects that are integral to a well-designed cap: how it is enforced, what it limits, how it limits spending growth, and how it can be overridden. So first, how should a spending cap be enforced? To be effective, spending caps need to be constitutional rather than statutory. Constitutional limits are much more resilient to the ups and downs of politics than statutory limits. This means that constitutional spending caps are more binding than statutory constraints. Second, what should a spending cap limit? Ineffective spending caps allow for workarounds and loopholes, such as only including appropriations from tax revenues. Instead, the base of spending limited by the cap needs to be broad. All state expenditures for a fiscal year should be covered, not just budgeted general revenue fund items. This also includes fee and user charge-based activity. Third, how does an effective spending cap limit the growth of state spending effectively? Economic literature, again, has demonstrated that the most effective spending cap grows by population and inflation rather than personal income or another economic measure. However, that literature also acknowledges that Alaska's economy is unique, and it typically excludes the state of Alaska from national analyses. Therefore, using a running average of GDP minus government services to reflect Alaska's private sector may also be an effective growth rate, even though it is not a mechanism that other states typically use. Fourth, what are the ways to override a spending cap? Again, an effective spending cap should be extremely difficult to override and have few exceptions, such as disasters. To allow spending beyond the limit should require either a vote of the people, a supermajority legislative vote, or even both. Alaska needs an effective limit on state spending. Every dollar spent by the state is a dollar not being used by the private sector, and Alaska also needs a strong private sector, especially moving forward as Alaskans are recovering from the economic effects of the pandemic. Alaska Policy Forum encourages the implementation of an effective constitutional appropriation limit. And thank you for the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you, Ms. Townsend. Next up, we do have a little bit of time. Does anybody have any questions? Next up would be I'm probably going to mispronounce your last name. It looks like Ms. Violet Apaliak. Are you there? We're not hearing you. Are you muted?
She's at the Dillingham MIO, and they're not called in yet.
Okay, I'm sorry. I thought she was present. So we'll put her on the side for a second. Next up would be Curtis Thayer. Curtis Thayer, if you can hear me, please state your name for the record and begin your presentation.
Thank you very much. Mr. Thayer has not yet arrived at the conference call. This is T.W. Patch. I am with the Alaska Energy Authority. I expect Mr. Thayer to arrive shortly. We are not planning on testifying, but we're here to attend if called upon.
All right. Well, thanks so much. Brief at ease. Senate Judiciary is back on the record. Violet, Ms. Apaliak, if you can hear me, please state your name more properly than I probably did for the record and begin your testimony.
Hello, yes, my name is Violet Apaliak. Atkaka Asakifstun Asaka Nupik. I am from family ties Manukutak Manakodak. And Alaknagik, I live in Dillingham, Choryum, and I am in response to SJR 301. And I wanted to also mention that late Hammond, his late wife Bella was a gardener, and she was from WKK. I'd like that Jay Hammond, late Jay Hammond's book about diapering devil, how Alaska helped staunch befouling by mismanaged oil wealth, a lesson for other oil-rich nations, and for the permanent fund, I support 404C, Alaska History, high school required courses, graduate courses to please also provide can be and Alaska Native culture courses, and please offer natural resources benefits such as from fisheries, oil revenue, and support tax money into a conservatory managed investment account, then each year issuing residents one new shape of dividend earning stock, as cited, as I read alongside, maybe it was a summary of late Jay Hammond's book.
Would that be Governor Hammond's book, Chips Off the Chopping Block?
No, the other one called Diapering the Devil, How Alaska Helped Staunch Befouling by Mismanaged Oil Wealth, semicolon, a lesson for other oil-rich nations.
All right. Well, Ms. Violet, if that's it, have you wrapped up your testimony?
Yes, support the permanent fund for Alaska evermore.
Thank you so much.
Yes, example dividends. Thank you, sir and ma'am.
And I also see Don Dyer. Mr. Dyer, if you can hear me, please state your name for the record and begin your public testimony.
Hi, thank you for this opportunity. My name is Don Dyer. I represent Mattsu Economic Development Corporation, and I'm calling you from Palmer, Alaska.
All right, begin your testimony, please.
And I just wanted to voice my support for SJR 301, and I think it is the way that they've structured this legislation is very much in line with common sense and practical and ways of doing things, so that we can have the right budget controls here in Alaska, but also to help drive economic development. And I've looked at the details of the bill, and I especially like that it gives you the 5-year rolling average, and also, but it's not locked into a certain percentage that can be adjusted year by year by the legislature, but it's capped at 14%, which seems completely reasonable. And I think it would be a boon to investment here in Alaska, because it would guarantee a constitutionally driven budget controls, and also give predictability to what our budget would be over over the course of years. And I like that it's driven off of as a percentage of GDP. So those are my comments, and I'm in support of it.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Dyer. Thank you for your public testimony on SJ-301. At this time, it looks like we've exhausted our list for public testimony, so I'm going to ask one more opportunity. Is there anyone in the room who wants to provide public testimony? Seeing no one in the room, all right, I'm going to close public testimony. Public testimony on SJ-301 is now closed. All right, I will now set SJ-301 aside until tomorrow. Please submit any amendments to my office by 5 p.m. this evening. Next up is Senate Joint Resolution 302. We'll now bring Senate Joint Resolution 302 before the committee. This resolution is a proposed constitutional amendment to the permanent fund by Senator Begich, Mercedes Colbert. Mercedes Colbert, staff to Senator Begich, is here in the room. Would you please come up to the table? Ms. Colbert, thank you for joining us today. Please state your name for the record and begin your presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can you hear me?
Maybe a little closer.
Good. I've never done this with a mask on yet, so.
Yeah, you can slide the mic to you. You don't have to go to the mic.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Mercedes Colbert, staff to Senator Tom Begich. He, of course, sends his regrets for not being able to be present or online at this time, as he is in transit. He'll be arriving here in Juneau tonight. So we thank all of you for the opportunity to hear this very conceptual bill. I will, and on that note, I'll take the sage advice that we hear very often in this bill. Something you're not supposed to say is that this is exactly not a simple bill. So thank you for listening to it. It'll be a fun discussion. So Senator Begich would like to emphasize that the intent of this bill is to present options for discussion. It is not perfect. We're open to other ideas, of course, with the same goals in mind. When we would like to remove the risk of unstructured draws from the earnings reserve account, resolve the tension of choosing between spending on services and versus dividends, constitutionally protect the permanent fund dividend and the power cost equalization endowment, invest our state savings with the permanent fund to generate more earnings for future generations, and help Alaska households and state lawmakers budget for a sustainable PFD amount indefinitely. So if it is the will of the chair, I could go through the sectional next.
Please do.
Switch over. And I believe, and if totally up to the committee, of course, I believe a lot of questions may be answered with the sectional and my presentation after that. But either way, I'm happy to stop for questions if you like, whatever you would like. Section 1 of the constitutional amendment, it amends Article 9, Section 15, which pertains to the permanent fund section of the state constitution. This is redesignating the section of the constitution as 15A. This section of the bill changes the existing language to clarify that 25% of all earnings of the Alaska Permanent Fund are placed into the principal. is creates the sustainable dividend account and the power cost equalization account within the permanent funds as subaccounts. The income-producing investments of the permanent fund and these two new subaccounts shall be designated by law, and the designation by law is found in Senate Bill 3003, and that is the accompanying statute bill that was referred direct to Senate Finance. So that is not referred here to this committee, but I'm happy to refer to it as needed in our discussion. Section 1 of the bill further requires the principal and income earnings of the fund and the two new subaccounts to be kept in the fund or subaccount. The legislature may appropriate from the fund and these subaccounts only as provided in the section of the state constitution. Moving to section 2, this creates new subsections 15B through E of Article 9, the permanent fund section of the constitution. This pertains to the percent of market values of the permanent fund, the sustainable dividend account, and the power cost equalization account. The new section, subsection 15B, the legislature may appropriate up to 4.5% of the average market value from the permanent fund to the general fund each fiscal year. This subsection protects the sustainable dividend account and power cost equalization accounts from general fund spending. New subsection 15C of Article 9 under this bill, the legislature shall appropriate 5% of the average market value of and from the sustainable dividend account each fiscal year to pay dividends to eligible Alaska residents. New subsection 15D, the legislature shall appropriate 5% of the average market value of and from the power cost equalization account each fiscal year. This appropriation shall be used for the payment of energy subsidies, capital improvements to energy infrastructure and rural communities, community assistance payments, and renewable energy projects. And please note that this maintains the current use of the power cost equalization endowment as in law under Alaska Statute 42.45. New subsection 15E of Article 9 establishes the average market value of the permanent fund, sustainable dividend account, and the power cost equalization account. The average market value of the whole fund includes the value of the sustainable dividend account and power cost equalization accounts. The value is calculated using the average value for the preceding 5 fiscal years, excluding the fiscal year that had just ended. The value of the whole fund and the subaccounts shall be calculated on the last day of the fiscal year, which is June 30. Moving to Section 3 of the bill, this adds a new Section 18 under Article 9 as well. This is, again, the pertaining to the finance and taxation of the Constitution. Section 3 would set a minimum dividend payment of $1,200 to eligible Alaska residents. This is not subject to inflation. And secondly, Section 3 requires the legislature to appropriate the amount necessary to meet the $1,200 dividend if the sustainable dividend account does not have enough funding to provide for the $1,200 dividend generated from its own earnings. Moving to Section 4 of the bill, this adds a new Section 30 under Article 15 of the Constitution, which is entitled the Schedule of Transitional Measures. This Section 30 establishes a transitional language for the permanent fund amendments discussed above in the bill and establishes a sustainable dividend and power cost equalization accounts. First, in Section 4A, is the transfer of the earnings reserve account to the principal. On June 30, 2023, which is the last day of fiscal year 23, the balance of the earnings reserve account shall be deposited into the permanent fund principal. This amount is determined by law under Senate Bill 3003 that accompanies this constitutional amendment. This amount shall be the unencumbered balance of the account on September 30, 2022, or June 30th, 2023, whichever is greater. Secondly, in Section 4B of the bill, this creates the sustainable dividend account using the amount equal to unpaid dividends from calendar years 2016 through 2022. On June 30th of 2023, the legislature shall appropriate from the permanent fund principal to the sustainable dividend account the amount that would have been paid under the current statutory dividend formula from fiscal years 17 through 2023. That is calendar years 2016 through 2022. This amount is transferred to the sustainable dividend account, which includes the earnings and interest accrued during this time. And under Senate Bill 3003, this does assume that there's a dividend paid at the amount of $1,000 in 2021 calendar year and 2022 calendar year. In subsection 4 and subsection C, we have the subsection that creates the power cost equalization account. On June 30th, 2023, the balance of the power cost equalization endowment fund shall be deposited in the new constitutionally protected power cost equalization account within the permanent fund as a subaccount. Subsection D, the revised and expanded Article 9, Section 15 of the Constitution, which were amended in Sections 1 and 2 of this bill, takes effect during fiscal year 2024. So that affects the budget process of the 2023 regular session. And finally, Subsection E provides transitional flexibility for determining by law under Senate Bill 3003 the average market value of a sustainable dividend and power cost equalization accounts. In the last section of the bill, Section 5, the constitutional amendment shall appear on the general election ballot following passage of this legislation, which of course requires a two-thirds vote in each chamber. That's 27 members of the House to vote in affirmative and 14 members of the Senate to vote in affirmative for a constitutional amendment to pass the legislature before it can go to the voters. So that concludes the sectional analysis.
Did you want to continue with this presentation?
Yes, I'd be happy to if you like.
Okay.
And before I do that, I'm sure everyone's wondering, where did $1,200 come from? Why did we pick that number? So this is the rounded calculated average, which is, again, not adjusted for inflation, that is using the information on the permanent fund dividend website. If one person received all 38 distributions of the dividend from 1982 to 2020, they would have received $45,419.41. So you divide that amount by 38 distributions, and the average comes out to $1,195.25. So we rounded up to $1,200.
A question from Senator Myers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am curious why you didn't adjust that for inflation.
The Chair, I'm not sure I could speak to that at this moment, actually. My recollection was that we wanted to have something that could be, I'm not really sure I know the answer to that question at this moment. I would have to defer to the Senator on that one.
Thank you. Any other questions? Senator Hughes.
I'll just make a comment in regard to non-inflation adjusting. In 20 or 30 years, it's going to be equivalent to probably about $600. So it would definitely, $1,200 might seem okay to some folks, but $600 in future years would seem pretty small. So.
Or even to reverse the number, I believe, when you reverse inflation check, the $1,000 dividend. The first one is on the order of a $2,000 dividend today, I believe. I'm not quite sure.
$2,700.
Thanks. Thanks for correcting me on that. Please resume.
Sure. Okay, slide 4. How does the sustainable dividend account start at $10.9 billion? So this slide shows you how we got there. And Ledge Finance is in Senate Finance Committee at this moment, but I'm happy to, or is he online now? Okay. So if you have any more technical questions about it, he may be able to answer. So this starts the, we assumed, again, under Senate Bill 3003 that accompanies this constitutional amendment, that the dividend amount provided in 2021 and 2022 is at $1,000. It was a round number that was just picked, really. And of course, all of these things are open to amendment. So with that in mind, we set out from there how this all calculates out. So we wanted to use the amount of money that was not paid out in the dividends since calendar year 2016, which is FY17. And the first year of the dividend that was paid below the statutory formula was, of course, in FY17, when there was that first veto under the previous governor in 2016. So the total return of the earnings, that amount was made, is also factored in. Cumulatively, the amount that would have been paid out in 2016 through the projections and through 2022, plus the projected return on those investments within the with the funds staying in the earnings reserve, those are all pulled out of the earnings reserve to create the new sustainable dividend account. So The goal was to be able to say that we're reinvesting the funds that would have been paid in previous dividends and giving it back to future generations of Alaskans. And interestingly, the amount of nearly $8.36 billion that was not paid in dividends over this period of time resulted in $2.58 billion in more earnings in our savings. And moving to slide five. Slide five is a rough attempt to make sense of how the mechanisms of this drafted proposal would work. As a preface, I would note that Senator Begich would like to offer this discussion assuming the new revenues generated from Senate Bill 3002, which will be heard in Senate Resources tomorrow. That bill builds on existing revenue sources to generate $250 million in new revenue in FY24. So we wanted to factor in a portion of some new revenue coming in while looking at these calculations. So the new sustainable dividend account and the PCE account are sub-accounts of the permanent fund under this proposal. So that's why they show an overlapping coloration at the top there. They are part of the permanent fund. They are sub-accounts. They're also, in a way, separated from the fund. So the total value of these combined accounts with the permanent fund add up to maybe roughly $85 billion in FY24. Total projections and estimates. They are used to calculate the total value of these together are used to calculate the 4.5% of the market value draw to the general fund. And that's estimated to be approximately $3.29 billion for FY24. Meanwhile, the spring 2021 revenue forecast estimates approximately $2.1 billion in undesignated general fund revenue outside of the POMV, outside of this calculation. Add this to the general fund, plus the approximately $250 million we'd love to see in new revenue in FY24, and then you add up to $5.64 billion available for undesignated general fund spending under this proposal. So note that because the power cost equalization, the PCE, and sustainable dividend accounts are still managed by the permanent fund corporation, they are sub-accounts of the overall fund. Because the sustainable dividend fund is still technically part of the permanent fund, we can still call this the permanent fund dividend. So there had been discussions at one point of completely separating it out, but that actually creates all kinds of issues in statutes and law and everywhere that you could imagine. We had to keep the sustainable dividend account as part of the permanent fund so that we could still have a permanent fund dividend. And moving to slide six. This slide, so we separate out the sub-accounts from this image to, again, note that the draws from those sub-accounts are separate from the permanent fund. These are their own POMV draws from each sub-account. So in practice, the dividend account and PCE account are separate from the fund. That is, they can only be used for the purposes described in this constitutional amendment proposal. And, of course, remember, we can dedicate funds in the Constitution. The 5% POMV from the power cost equalization account is estimated to be about $55 to $60 million to be used for the payment of energy subsidies, capital improvements to energy infrastructure for rural communities, community assistance payments, and renewable energy projects. And again, this stays true to what's currently in statute for what the PCE Endowment Fund is currently used for. The 5% POMV from the sustainable dividend account is estimated to be about $545 million during that first effective year. This pays for more than half of the amount needed to meet that $1,200 dividend amount, but not all of it. Approximately $275 million would be needed to make up that difference drawn from the general fund. The constitutional amendment proposes that if the sustainable dividend account is not enough to generate $1,200 dividend, then the legislature shall appropriate that difference. But the language is most easily interpreted to mean not more than $1,200 dividends. But of course, these things are all open for changing by the committee.
A question from Senator Myers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm curious. So on this slide, you note that you've got a 5% draw off the, both the PCE fund and the dividend fund, but the bill states that you've only got a 4.5% draw off of the permanent fund. Why the different draw rates?
Thank you, Senator Myers, to the chair. We went through several different models this spring, and what we found was that it was too much of a draw on the overall fund. The effective draw weight was closer to 6%, as I recall. So I have lots of old models. Be happy to share if you're curious. But we did model that at one point. They would probably have to be updated, but I don't have a more updated one now from that time. But it was a little too much stress on the permit fund, so we reduced that amount.
Follow-up?
Yeah, just quick follow-up. If it's too much stress on the permanent fund, why isn't it also too much stress on the other funds?
Through the chair, I believe Mr. Bell might be a better person to answer that question for me.
Let's see, Mr. Bell?
On Ledge Finance.
I don't believe, oh, let me check, see if he's on here.
Got the
wrong tab up. Sorry about that. Mr. Bell, yes, if you want to provide some insight on that, I didn't see you out there. Please state your name and your affiliation for the record.
Thanks. For the record, this is Connor Bell, Fiscal Analyst with Legislative Finance Division. And based on my understanding of the bill, the permanent fund, the principal, while the 4.5% POMV draw, it's based on the combination of that principal and the PCE and the sustainable dividend fund. The 4%, 5% POMV draw is based on that. However, the actual draw is only coming from the permanent fund principal itself. And so under my understanding of this, it would not put the same potential stress on the PCE or sustainable dividend accounts because those are only seeing that structured 5% POMV draw. They're not seeing more than that.
Senator Hughes.
Maybe I'm missing something. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mercedes, you said something about something being a 6% effective rate draw, but right now the current 5% POMV draw is an effective rate draw of 3.7 of the current balance. And even if we were to draw an additional 1.5% to help us transition to certainty, as the fiscal plan group recommended, we try to work towards a 50-50 PFD. That effective rate draw is still only 5%. So I'm kind of confused how something might be a 6% rate draw. So if you could comment on that, and then I have another question, Mr. Chair.
Yes, thank you, Senator Hughes, through the chair. Excuse me. So those were based on models that are very much out of date now. Those models were done in April of earlier this year. This was before the new CalM projections, before we had the assumptions of the fiscal plan working group. That was under, I believe, more conservative projections of the permanent fund returns, and also under a different format of this, a different mechanism of how this bill was structured. So there's a lot of things that were very different in those projections. So the effective draw rate in that proposal at the time we were working on ended up having a higher effective draw rate than what we wanted. So that really, that 6% rough effective draw rate at the time of that model is very much out of date now. But so again, this speaks to a much older version, that particular number. So my feeling is that it's not a concern now as this is. Of course, we're happy to model what a 5% draw might look like under this current structure.
Okay, thank you. And another question?
On the same topic?
No.
Because I'll just add while we're on this topic. I can imagine why 5% is too much of a draw on the permanent fund, because currently we take 5% of the $83 billion, the whole thing. But under this plan, we're going to draw three separate 5%s. We're going to take a 5% of 1/8 of the fund. We're going to take a 5% of, and that's going to be the sustainable dividend account. We're going to take 5% of whatever the percentage happens to be of the power cost equalization one. And then we're going to take another 5% off of the main body of the fund. And I kind of find it ironic, because now under the POMV 5.0 plan, we take that 5% and we cut it in half, and half goes to the state as 2.5%, and half is supposed to go to the dividend as 2.5%. I can imagine 4.5% of still 7/8 of this thing, 4.5% would be a huge amount going just to the state. But I don't even think that number should be smaller than 4.5%. But second, and that's just a statement. No question to be answered. Senator Hughes.
Yeah, my question is that red arrow, the $275 million, which on the prior page slide you show us the revenue bill, SB 3002, would bring in about $250 million. So essentially what you're doing is you're taxing people and you're using that to pay for PFDs, which really fundamentally is not what a permanent fund dividend is. And one of the narratives and the message that has really disturbed me, and our Senator Hoffman made a statement on the floor, you know, revenues aren't to pay for PFDs, they're to pay for government. And so I appreciate the desire to have it structured with the permanent fund so you feel like you can call it a permanent fund dividend. But when you're basically taxing folks in order to pay for a PFD, which is not what I think we should be proposing, it's a problem. And so I just thought I'd point out, I do want to say too, Mr. Chair, I really love the fact that Senator Begich is proposing something and wants to try to solve, and he's putting together a package. What concerns me, though, is that we spent a considerable amount of time and energy with the Fiscal Plan Working Group coming together to try to bring forward a plan. And for us to do that, many of us had to move seriously off where we stood. For me, my plan might have been cut $1 billion, try to stick with a statutory PFD, that kind of thing. Well, I moved off of that and came to what the Fiscal Plan Working Group has proposed. So to have a proposal that kind of, well, it is not really taking what the working group is saying, where we could meet, it is kind of concerning, because it would be like me coming in forward and putting my original, what I would have preferred doing. So I guess that's my concern. At this point, we've been going around the same old mountain for 6 years, and we came up with a proposal that we felt people could come together on. So kind of starting over with something new that isn't kind of at least more in line with that is just a problem for me. So, and also that taxing people to pay a PFD, that's not what a PFD is in Alaskans' minds.
Thank you, Senator Hughes. Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I also very much appreciate Senator Begich's bringing forward this idea. I agree it's not particularly in keeping with the model that the working group came up with. On the other hand, what the working group came up with is also taxing Alaskans in order to pay a PFD. It just is. And, of course, the alternative and another piece of the working group's recommendation was reducing some services to certain Alaskans in order to provide the service of a PFD to all Alaskans. It may not be how we want to think of the PFD, but that is what the PFD is. It is a government check from public fisc, the public treasury, to all Alaskans. It's an important program. I think it's a valuable program. It's a program I support. Wishing don't make it different than what it is. So the interesting thing about this particular approach to me is that it directly requires the PFD to be of a certain size, but washes a piece of that through the general fund draw from the permanent fund until this separate dividend account grows to the point where it can provide that size PFD. And of course, you know, the general fund is a general fund, so it's got investment earnings, it's got taxes, it's got rents and user fees and all the everything in it. And I'm curious why the multi-step approach in this model, rather than one draw, one general fund, PFD obligations, other service obligations.
Thank you, Senator Keel and Senator Hughes. If I could speak to one thing that Senator Hughes had brought up, as well as answer your question.
Please do,
through the chair. So the intent of the bill, so you may know notice by the work order number, this was initially put out fairly early. we wanted, Senator Begich wanted to introduce this bill to throw in some new ideas, some new concepts for consideration. And it is by no means in any way to overstep or step on or step over the great work of the working group, which, you know, many of us definitely are very, very grateful for. We know that you had countless hours over the quote interim that we had, and came up with a fantastic report of four pages that was very comprehensive and really helped shape the conversations that we're talking about now. And a lot of our models we redid to include the baseline assumptions of the working group, which was fantastic work. And these are concepts that Senator Begich is open for consideration. And in fact, there's no better committee to consider it than one that has three members of the working group sitting on it. So I know he's open to amendments. He's open to more conversations. He's more to more dialogue. He just wanted to put out the concept of, going back to Senator Keel's question, of why not a split? Why not doing a 75-25, 50-50? This is just one more idea that's out there, is why about potentially creating new accounts that effectively do the same thing, is taking the tension away of government spending from the dividend payment itself. So it's just another idea to throw out there into the mix. It is absolutely open to changes, to other amendments, anything else like that. But the idea was to separate that choice of, I know that's a very, it's a term that doesn't always go over very well in this building, but the choice between how do we spend our funds? How do we spend the appropriations for, you know, troopers and schools and ferries and everything else? And then there's the dividend. But when you take a separate account within the fund and it's generating its own earnings, then that's the dividend over here. And then the rest of it is government services from the general fund. You don't even have to worry about that anymore. Outside of that amount that needs to make up the minimum, of course, that minimum is, you know, it's not a hard number. It's absolutely open to amendment. You can get rid of it if you like to. That's, you know, anything you'd like to do. But of the minimum amount, that is. But the idea was to, instead of splitting off the PUMV by percentage, as we have been commonly putting out in concepts in this building, it's an idea to create its own account. So that's totally separated from government services. So you're actually giving back the earnings of the people direct from those earnings that were actually made since 2016, as dividends had been distributed beneath the current statutory formula.
Thank you, Ms. Colbert. Any other questions? You have a few more slides to go, I believe.
Okay, thank you. Let me find my place. We're on slide 6, I believe.
6-ish, yeah.
Yeah, now we're moving to slide 7. So these charts, right, so just to finish up, as noticed, currently under that first year of distribution under FY24, if the constitutional amendment went as proposed before voters and became law, then yes, you will have to draw some from the general fund to make up that difference to make up that $1,200 dividend payment. So the next question is, of course, how much does that really affect the general fund? How long would legislators have to budget that into their budget bill for, and how long do we have to keep spending down part of the general fund to make up for that $1,200 dividend that sustainable dividend account can't quite generate enough to pay for yet on its own? So that's where slide 7 comes in. This is a rough estimate, and again, Leg Finance had produced these two graphs, and it can answer more technical questions on this. So that shows the rough impact of the general fund. It's mostly paid the dividend is mostly paid for by the sustainable dividend account, but not all of it. And it does take a while for the sustainable dividend account to start generating its own amount. And again, all these things are up for changing. But ultimately, the sustainable dividend account generates its own dividend payout. It's just much further on than we would particularly, we're still playing with the ideas of how we can structure this. So in the ideal world, it would create its own, enough earnings on its own to generate its own dividend. So plenty of room for discussion and changes there.
A question from Senator Hughes.
By what year would it? Because I'm seeing 2040, it's still not. So have you projected out? Is it FY60 or what is it?
Through the chair, perhaps Ledge Finance might have an idea, but this is as far out as we've gone in our projections.
Mr. Bell, do you have any input on this?
For the record, this is Connor Bell, Legislative Finance Division. Through the chair, so basically we would expect that giving these current assumptions at some point, it would become self-sustainable, but, you know, 20-year projections are already very speculative and hypothetical. I, you know, can't really speak to when it would occur that it would become self-sufficient. I will just note that, you know, based on Cowan's returns of 6.2%, the structured draw would be, you know, somewhere around 4% of the actual, you know, prior year fund balance. And there's population growth of, I believe, somewhere around 0.5% or 0.6% that we're assuming in our model and some increasing expenses. And that's part of why it's taking a little longer for the sustainable dividend fund to reach $1,200 a person. But under these assumptions, it would at some point reach that threshold. I just cannot speak to that offhand and when that might occur.
Thank you. A question or comment from Senator Keel.
A question for Mr. Bell, Mr. Chairman, if I may. Mr. Bell, rough numbers, I know you haven't had time to do an analysis, but if we were to adopt this approach and wanted the sustainable dividend fund in the bill to throw off a roughly $1,200 PFD from the get-go, what would that balance need to be? Ballpark.
I might hear him scribbling on paper right now.
For the record, this is Connor Bell, Legislative Finance Division. I believe it would, and yeah, I apologize. I don't want to give a number that's totally off. I can respond to the committee after this meeting.
That sounds good. Or even just after, if you need a little time to do some ciphering, Ms. Colbert could hit another slide or two. If you decide you come up with a number you're comfortable with, feel free to let us know, and we'll hear it at the time, okay?
Great. That sounds good.
Ms. Colbert, please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Slide 8. I believe that might be our last slide. Slide 8 shows the calendar returns for this constitutional amendment and its accompanying bill, Senate Bill 3003. This assumes the fiscal plan working group's basic baseline assumptions for spending, revenue forecasts, et cetera, as well as Callan's optimistic projections for the permanent funds returns. The principal does grow over time in this projection using the mechanisms of this proposed bill. The principal grows over time. The sustainable dividend fund is sustainable and is sustained over time, and as is the power cost equalization account. So that is what that shows us from Ledge Finance. We do also have additional projections and models by the division with both Cowan projections as well as the more conservative stress testing of using FY07 to FY17 returns, and I have those available by request as well. And that concludes my slides.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Myers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So beyond the initial deposit into the Sustainable Dividend Fund, do any of the royalties or other things that have been going in, other types of lease payments, et cetera, lease sales, I should say, that have been going into the permanent fund for the last 45 years now, do any of those make it into the sustainable dividend fund?
Through the chair, Senator Myers, that remains unchanged under this bill. So what the current structure is for royalties, those go where they already go. Those aren't changed at all in this proposed legislations.
Follow up?
Would the legislature be able to transfer from the permanent fund main account to the sustainable dividend fund account?
Excuse me, can I ask you to repeat the question one more time?
So all the royalties are going straight into the main account for the permanent fund. And if I'm understanding it correctly, all the royalties go straight into the main account. None of them would be added to the sustainable dividend fund. So there would be no additional funds naturally, organically moving into the sustainable dividend fund. Would the legislature be able to transfer from the primary permanent fund account into the dividend account?
The chair, I believe Ledge Legal might be able to answer that question. I think Emily might be on the line. I know we did look into that concept at one point early on, but perhaps Emily might be able to answer the legal ability of being able to do that.
Would that be Ms. Nauman? Ms. Nauman, if you're listening in, do you care to place yourself on the record and provide any input?
Sure. For the record, this is Emily Nauman with Legislative Legal Services. The bill does not, or excuse me, the constitutional amendment does not allow a use of the permanent fund principle other than that that's set out in the resolution. So the short answer to your question is no. The legislature would be free to appropriate money into the permanent, the sustainable dividend fund, say from the general fund or some other amounts available for appropriation. The only sort of income that the sustainable dividend fund would be generating as to self-sustain it would be the income of the initial amount deposited into the fund.
Ms. Nauman, while I have you on the record, is so technically the sustainable dividend fund, is that inside or outside of the principal?
To the chair, the sustainable dividend fund lives inside the permanent fund. It would be separately accounted for, but the funds, I believe, technically would be, not I believe, the funds would technically be part of the permanent fund.
So they'd all still be part of the principal?
Correct, but separately accounted for.
Okay. Senator Hughes.
Well, can you show me, please, Emily, where in the bill it's moving the ERA into the principal, because in Mercedes' slides you refer to things as the sustainable dividend fund slash ERA. So the ERA, wouldn't you be able to move funds, as Senator Myers asked, could you move funds to the sustainable dividend account? Couldn't you do that from the ERA if it's not folded into the principal?
Again, for the record, this is Emily Nauman, Legislative Legal Services, through the chair. In Section 4 of the bill, that's Section 30A, added to the Constitution, the balance of the earnings reserve account in whole is deposited into the principal of the permanent fund. At that point, it would no longer be available for appropriation by the legislature.
Okay. Thank you. I guess just the ERA labeling on the slides threw me off. Thanks.
Thank you, Ms. Nauman. Any other questions from the committee? Seeing none, I'm brief at ease. Record. I'll just add my ciphering. A little while ago, I had come up with $16 billion as being what it would take to produce a $1,253 dividend, and so I don't know how long it would take $10 billion to get $16 billion if we're only growing by like maybe 2% a year. But Senator Hughes, I believe you might have had a question for Mr. Thayer if he's listening in.
Yep. Curtis Thayer, I have a question for you. I happen to be able to, I'm sitting by the chair, so I could see on his screen that you're online, and so I was just wondering if you had any comments about the 5% draw for PCE and that amount, how that would be for you in the near future as well as projected into the future.
Mr. Thayer?
Yes, Senator Hughes, could you please repeat the question? I apologize. I was on a phone call to the Department of Law at the time that you were asking it.
No problem. Senator Hughes, please repeat the question.
Yes. Thank you for being with us, Curtis, and being available. I'm just wondering, in this Senate Joint Resolution 302, the 5% draw for PCE for each year, how that amount would be compared to the current need this year, next year, and then projected into the future. Just, do you have any comments on that? How that would calculate out is actual dollar amount and what's needed.
Yeah, currently, through the chair, Senator Hughes, currently we use the 5% look back, or it's a 5% look back over the five previous earning years to determine future PCE, and then it's a cascading, I call it a cascading, because you have it pays for PCE, then community assistance, and then the current program allows up to $25 million to be used for one of the three items of a bulk fuel revolving loan fund, powerhouses, or the renewable energy fund. And so that has happened only twice in the past several years, one being this current calendar year. So I guess the short answer is the 5% rule is what we use. That's what we look back for earnings, 5% over the previous years, and it has been sufficient to not only sustain PCE, but community assistance to a degree, and in really good years, to allow us to do renewable energy and powerhouses in rural Alaska using the fund.
Follow up.
Follow up.
So it sounds like you're satisfied with that 5% be that would be workable then.
Through the chair, yes, that 5% has been workable for us in the past, and I would see that going forward. Of course, we would always hope for record earnings.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Thayer. Thank you, Senator Hughes. One other question I had is Section 2, Paragraph E. And it looks like just a little bit of a phraseology. I know we talk about using five of the last six fiscal years. This still, it kind of, it almost looks like it could be interpreted by some of them, I mean, four of the last 5 years, but it's still intended to be five of the last six, five full fiscal years, not counting the last one, correct?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Mercedes Colbert for Senator Begich. Yes, I actually just discussed this with Ms. Nauman just a day or two ago, and that's correct, and she could speak to that a little more. The basic intent is still the same for the last five fiscal years.
Thank you for the clarification. Any other questions from the committee? Ms. Colbert, do you have any final comments?
Just thank you, committee members and the chair, for your time and for considering this very interesting and different bill.
Thank you, Ms. Colbert. Thank you, Senator Begich, wherever you might be. I'll state for the record that I do have some concerns for this approach. My preference is to continue pursuing SGR6 with the 50-50 POMV, but this does have some information in it for us to mull over. We will now set SGR 302 aside for further committee work. Is there anything else before the committee? Seeing none, it looks like we are adjourned at 2:30.